welcome to the Boag World Show, the most unorganised episode I think I've ever run. I completely forgot we were recording it, and I haven't looked at any of the notes, so this will be a good one. Hello, Marcus, how are you doing?
Hello, Paul. I'm all right. I'm a bit sort of like, it's the middle of winter.
Yeah, I know.
Can I just go and hibernate for a while, really?
I've been budgeting for the day. There's nothing more exciting than doing budgeting, is there?
Budgeting? What, like kind of work or home or both or what?
Both. All right. Yeah, it's very, very dull, but there we go. These things need to be done every now and again.
I've been writing questions for a survey.
Ah, see, that's more interesting. Don't you just get ChatGPT to do that these days? I'm joking.
I hadn't considered that.
I tell you what I do, actually. Mm. Once you've written them, right, run them through ChatGPT and say, act as a, you know, survey expert or user researcher, and rewrite these questions to be as clear, concise, and unbiased as possible.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah, particularly the unbiased bit, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. So, yeah, because it's a bit of a... It's not one I can, you know, I can't just go, but use an old one.
No.
It's a slightly more difficult audience. So, if anything, I've been finding reasons to stare out the window, which I'll come on to later.
Yeah, it's always good to stare out the window. I'm a huge fan. Anyway, on this week's show, we're going to be... Marcus is doing the main segment today about the value of in-person interactions. I'm going to be sharing a little bit about A-B testing. And also, we're going to be talking about why the Nielsen Norman Group believes AI is redefining UX. So that's the plan for today. But first of all, this isn't going out till the middle of February, but it's our first podcast recording after Christmas. Did you have a nice Christmas, Marcus?
I had a lovely Christmas, Paul.
Good.
I proposed to Michelle on Christmas Day, and she
did
said yes.
Did you? Congratulations. Yeah. Oh, that's lovely. So when's that happening?
We're probably next summer, you know, like a year and a half's time.
When you can be asked?
I've got no idea. I was just like, well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? Kind of like, yeah, get married, but not actually organising it, I've got a clue. Yeah.
That's a young person's game. In fact, you don't get much of a say in it anyway, do you? You just have to, as the man, you just have to do what you're told. That was what my wife told me the rules were.
Pretty much.
You'll do the music, I bet.
I'll definitely do the music, although that's quite a tricky one because I've got lots of music-y friends and it's like, well, don't know. Yeah, already, it's like I'm instantly, I've got no idea. Where I also don't want to spend £1 million on it because I'm sort of heading towards retirement and I've got past the stage of, oh, fuck it, let's just spend the money. I'm now, no, I need to keep big pots of money because it'll run out one day. So so I completely changed how I operate. So I'm like, oh, no, we can't spend, you know, 50,000. I mean, I hear stories of people spending 50 grand on a wedding. I mean, that's probably quite low, actually.
Yeah.
These days. And
it's incredible.
One day. It's insane.
Our attitude was to spend as little as possible on the wedding and as much as possible on the honeymoon, right? Yeah. Why spend that money on other people when you can spend it on yourself?
Yeah. Also, we know a lot of people, which makes it really hard. You being one of them, Paul.
Yes.
Well, so I'm not going to spend loads of money on you, Paul, so obviously.
No, exactly. That would be a truly terrible idea. I won't be at all offended if you don't invite me. My wife will be, but I won't be because I hate weddings with a passion. But I probably would turn out for you, I suspect.
How can you hate weddings? That is the most miserable thing I've heard. I mean, they're surely... I mean, all right, you don't want to go to one where there's loads of fights or anything like that, which I'm sure does happen. But generally speaking, or you don't want to go to one when you don't know anyone except one person. That's rubbish.
Yes.
But generally, they're brilliant. Come on.
I saw Simon Anstall did a really good stand-up once on this subject. And he said that he thinks it's arrogant and ridiculous to have a wedding. Because you've already been living together for years, right? So basically, one day you've just decided to go, we must announce our love to the world and everybody must gather to see us announce our love to one another.
Absolutely.
And give us presents. And for some reason, I have to travel to wherever you are getting married. Although it won't be that far, so that's fine.
It's not
far. I'll turn up for yours. Yours will be near. That's okay.
Exactly. We're only up the road. And Yeah, and you'll and the other Headscape people will be there.
Yeah, that'll be nice. That will be nice. I will.
From that perspective. Yeah, as, we're just thinking, do something very kind of small and very family, and then just have a massive party.
Yeah.
In a big tent or something.
But yeah. I like that plan. Yeah. Oh, well, I was going to talk about the fact that I spent my Christmas playing Starfield.
You.
But that, yeah, getting married does somewhat trump me. So I won't bother now. Let's talk about techie stuff instead. Let's talk about the web, because that I do enjoy, unlike weddings. So yes, you'll just
I don't like techie stuff. It's like it's boring.
Yeah.
That's
so
not
perhaps
true.
You should
it's
be doing
true.
A wedding podcast. Oh, perhaps God. You should change. God, no. Could you imagine? Oh, dear. That yes. would be
flowers and things. Not that I'd love flowers, but growing in the garden.
Yes. let's talk about... there's no way of transitioning at this point, is there? Mm. You can't get from weddings to A-B testing platforms very easily. That's probably a little bit much, but we'll
not
give it a go.
Not done any A-B testing in a while, Paul. Tell me all about A-B testing.
Well, I was trying to make that transition. I was thinking maybe you should A-B test your wife-to-be with other options to, you know, is that not an acceptable
use of A-B
testing? I don't
think that's allowed. Although she has decided that she wants to get a T-shirt with WTB written on the front. Wife-to-be.
Oh, right. No, I couldn't wear that out.
You just said that it, Paul. Literally, those words had just come out of your mouth.
Oh, had they? I don't listen to myself. I find myself quite boring, if I'm honest. So I tend to skip it.
You're a lot of things, Paul, but you're not boring.
I don't know. That was the most backward compliment I think I've ever heard, Marcus. I'm a lot of things. What things did you have in mind, Marcus? Anyway, A-B testing.
It doesn't want me to actually answer that.
I don't want you to answer that. No. I just thought it was worth a quick mention about A-B testing. Sure. I don't want to get into it majorly. Because I know a lot of people don't have time to do it or whatever. I personally love it. I think for certain things, when you're messing around with text, images, headlines, when a stakeholder insists that they've had some great idea about their copy, I find A-B testing a really good way of shutting them up. And it's also really good for the conversion rate optimization work that I do. But it's really valuable, but it now feels really complicated to do. Because it used to be that you would, if you were starting on it and you hadn't done a lot of A-B testing in the past, you'd just install Google Optimize, right? It was free, it was simple to use, it was great, you could be up and running in minutes. And of course, they've taken it away for whatever reason. Google giveth and Google taketh away.
They do.
And so that's gone now, and it's kind of left a bit of a kind of difficult situation.
Void.
If you're trying to get into A-B testing, there's not a lot of options. Because you look at the prices and they're immediately starting at $200, $300, $400 a month, starting at, you know, which unless you've got a big e-commerce site or whatever, kind of feels like it precludes it a little bit. But I did want to point out just three options that are available to you if you fancy giving it a go and don't want to spend a fortune before you know whether or not it's going to work for you. The first one is one of the big players, VWO. They've got a very posh platform that does a lot of very clever things and costs a fortune, but they do offer a very generous free tier. Okay. So, you can test with up to 50,000 user sessions for free.
That's
now
a lot.
For most, that is a lot. And for most people, that is enough to be able to give it a go. Because remember, of course, we're not even talking about 50,000 across the whole site. You're talking about 50,000 on the pages that you're testing. So that is actually really generous. So you can actually, it's not as bad as you think. You can use VWO to give it a go, to try out a bit of A-B testing. And I would really encourage you to do that.
We use VWO. The Visual Website Optimizer, that's what it stands for.
Yeah, but
yonks
they don't,
ago.
they don't use those words anymore. You're not allowed to refer to them as Visual Website Optimizer. You have to call them VWO because a very expensive marketing and branding agency probably decided that that was better.
Oh, well, a bit like like Staffordshire University becoming the University of Stafford or Staffordshire, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that'll cost you 25 grand.
Yes, exactly. Or I've seen logos. Wasn't there a logo redesign recently that just went from being italic to non-italic and that was it? And, you know, I'm 50 not getting grand. Into that. 50 grand, please. If only my job was as easy as that. Although it's all the meetings you have to sit through to get to that. That's why it costs you 50 grand.
I feel I'm allowed to take the piss because I do that kind of work. Yeah. And it is all that, you know, all the research that we talk about a lot, all discovery, adds up to decisions that people will go, well, you could have just decided that in 5 minutes, couldn't you? Well,
yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yes, if you could have persuaded all those people to agree. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry,
so there's a couple of other little kind of A/B testing tools if you want to kind of get started. So VWO is a great starting point if you want free. There is a platform called Crazy Egg that you might want to check out as well. I'll put all of these in the show notes, which will be boegg.world/012. Hmm. Crazy Egg has basic A/B testing. It's not as good as VWO, to be honest. Unsurprisingly, because it's ridiculously cheap. But what it does have is a load of other tools, like things like heat maps and that kind of stuff in it. So it's worth checking out Crazy Egg. Another one that I came across recently, which is what made me think to do this section of the show, was one called Check Mango. Bloody ridiculous name.
Never heard of it.
No. But it's very affordable and it looks pretty good. So if the 50K number is becoming problematic for whatever reason, or there are other limitations of VWO that are annoying you, try having a look at Check Mango, because that's very affordable. And unlike Crazy Egg, it's focused just on A/B testing, which means it's more powerful. Crazy Egg has got certain limitations that I don't like about it if you just want to do A/B testing. But it is good for the other stuff as well. So, yeah, I just thought I'd mention a few little A/B testing tools that I've come across and how I've dealt with the demise of Google Optimize. I'm always on the cutting edge of the latest innovations. I think they cancelled Google Optimize probably 3 years ago, and I've only just got around to talking about this now, but there you go.
People come here to find out what the cutting edge actually looks like, Paul.
Well, they're finding out it's not. If you tell people it's the cutting edge, then they don't know any different.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wasn't it Goering that once said, it's always good to quote a Nazi, I find, in the show. Goering that said, if you tell a lie convincingly enough, it becomes the truth. So
sounds like the kind of thing, yes. One of
We are a cutting edge podcast.
The cutting edge podcast.
The, I like that.
Yes.
You're going to tell me now I've got to interact with other human beings, and I'm not sure I'm going to like this segment.
Well, no, I'm not going to, Paul, because, well, maybe I am. Let's decide that at the end.
You don't know what you're going to say until you start saying it.
I know, words now, blah, 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 blah. So you said to me the other day when we both went, oh, shit, we've got a podcast in 2 days. What are we going to talk about? And I said, well, it's high time I talked about something. And the first thing that came into my head, and there is a reason for this, as you'll find out, is in-person, face-to-face interaction important? Which I think it is, but how important, yeah. I guess. So what's brought all this on? And apart from the sort of clear decline in people meeting in person since COVID, our recent experiences at Headscape have got me thinking about this rather more, which I'll come on to. But just to quickly talk about the decline in people meeting since COVID, I've got a little anecdote around that, which is I moved into the area I'm in now nearly 6 years ago now. Well, 5.5 years ago, November 2019. 2019 doesn't feel like 5.5 years ago, does it?
Oh, don't. There are all kinds of things like that people quote. Yeah, that things like, oh, this album from my formative years came out nearer.
It's 40 years old today.
Yeah, yeah, nearer when the dinosaurs walked the earth than today. You know, things like that.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, But when I moved to this area, one of the key factors of me choosing it was that it had a direct train connection into London. Mm. Now, as you may remember, so I've moved here in 2019, November 2019. March 2020, the first lockdown happened.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this when I was writing my notes for this, that I think I've been on the train to London for business four times in the last five years. I have visited our American clients more often than go to London on business. That's how much kind of face-to-face things have changed. But that's not the specific of what I want to talk about today. So back to Headscape. As you know, Paul, Headscape's been partially home-based, at least, since it started 23 years ago. 23 years ago.
Don't say that. See, it just gets worse. That's nearly a quarter of a century.
I know. But recently, again, during COVID, we realised that we weren't using our office down in Winchester, much as it was lovely. Some of the people, we kind of had a kind of cohort of regular users, and some of those people moved further away. So they were like, we don't want to come into the office anymore. We hired someone from Glasgow and someone from Manchester, who were never going to be kind of regular attendees, along with people from Cambridge and the like. So, at the time, this is an unnecessary financial drain. We're going to get rid of it, which kind of logically obviously makes sense. Although that said, it didn't actually cost that much. But anyway, I used to love the days we went into the office, mainly because I like talking.
You like people.
I like people.
You're weird like generally, that. That's why you're looking forward to your wedding.
That's a good point. Good point. But you were the same, actually. When you used to come into the office, you'd just basically talk with everyone all day. Blah, 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 blah.
Oh,
blah,
yeah,
blah,
I didn't
blah,
do any
blah,
work.
Blah, 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 blah. But sort of slightly contradictorily, which I think is a word, I got more work done when I was in the office.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Because, as this is referring back to what I was saying earlier, I was always less tempted to stare out of the window as I am here, because I'm just here on my own going, la la la, nice trees, rather than whatever it is I'm meant to be doing. Whereas if there's other people around, you're like, I better get on with it, sort of thing, even though I'm constantly chatting with anyone. So I used to really like it. And of course, when we binned the office, we said, we're going to get together very regularly to brainstorm and meet up and, work on ideas, because we know that's really important. But how many times have we done that in the last three years since we've done it? Once, and that was last November. we meet up for Christmas do, but that doesn't count. That's not working. But so I'm finally getting to the point, actually. So I think we and I think everyone professionally is getting better at meeting and chatting via online meetings, like we're doing now, Paul. We used to meet up to record this podcast sometimes.
We did.
Quite often. But now we're all much more used to doing this kind of thing and doing it more effectively than maybe we used to. But what we, and I'm talking about me and Chris really here, started to notice was a kind of selfishness between the people that worked at Headscape. Maybe that's a bit too strong. More of a kind of inward looking. I don't know, maybe it's a little bit too strong, but we started to kind of see people behaving more like sort of, these are the people I work with rather than the people who, these people are my friends. Which I guess, does that matter? Maybe it doesn't, does or doesn't, and we can discuss that some other time. But for Headscape, it does. We've always had a really quite strong team of people who are family-like, for want of a better description. So we felt like this was a backward step, and we put it down to the fact that we'd been promising we'd get together more often to work, and we didn't, because there's always something else to organise or do or whatever. Anyway, so we said, right, that's it. We're going to organise a regular meetup, which we started last November when we went to Bath, and we're going to pick different places to go.
Yeah,
we had a great time. We did. It was basically we hired an office space, a big board meeting room with a huge table, and everyone sat around it and kind of we had an agenda because we hadn't done it before. There were a lot of things to talk about. And one of the things was that and I'm going off on a bit of a tangent here, but to talk about kind of more strategic stuff, like, you know, what should we be doing as a company? What's, you know, what are our goals? Blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. And as I think I've mentioned on this podcast, Headscape is now employee owned. It's an employee ownership trust, which really means that the employees should be getting involved with strategic decisions and things like that. So going away and talking and working together has kind of facilitated that, which is great. But that's not the main reason for this. The main reason is just to get together and do some work. So to be in the same place and do some work, which we did. And I really need to book the next one because we've said we're going to do it every 3 months. So that's like next month, isn't it? which is what I am going to do because it's everyone loves it. Everyone really, you know, kind of gets a good feeling off working together. And obviously there's kind of you go out to eat and things like that as well. And generally socialise and add more value to your relationship with the people you work with, which is what we want. And what we noticed was not happening when we didn't meet up, to the point of, you know, a couple of kind of, not nasty, but sort of like some certain situations happened where we thought, well, that ain't great. You know, we should be being a bit kinder to each other. Anyway, in the spirit of the long running theme of this show, I decided to ask AI about the values of in-person interaction.
You were too lazy to write your own thing.
Well, I've blurbed on quite a long time already, so that was my bit, and now this is what AI said, and I'm going to comment on it. So,
okay, you
go. There's a lot AI did not go on, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. Yes, it can do. That is very true. I don't disagree.
So I'm going to skip over quite a lot of this. And there's a definite theme that comes out of this. But anyway, it starts off by saying, this is ChatGPT. In-person interaction offers a range of valuable benefits that enhance communication, relationships, and productivity. So, yay, it agrees. Yeah. It's certainly an important thing. And then it goes into basically the key values of in-person interaction, of which there are 20, so I'm not going to spend ages on loads of these. First thing it says is enhanced communication, which is non-verbal cues, tone and emphasis. Mm-hmm. Basically, without face-to-face, you can't read body language, you can't understand people's expressions and things like that. But I don't actually think that's what I'm talking about here, because you can do that over Zoom, over Teams or whatever. But moving on to point two, the next one, stronger relationships and trust. It says physical presence helps build stronger connections and trust between individuals, blah, 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 blah. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But I'll go over the rest of the list, but that's kind of, there are a couple of outliers on this, but basically they're between those two things. They're saying being face-to-face means that people understand each other better, but I think that can happen via a camera. But you get more value. There's a stronger connection if you're in person, which brings trust, which is obviously a good thing. To keep going, immediate feedback. That's something which you get via an online meeting. But a deeper emotional connection is something that you're going to get via an in-person meeting. What we got? Number five: improved focus and engagement. In-person conversations often minimize distractions, leading to higher levels of focus and attention. I think that's kind of relating to things like brainstorming being better in person.
I would agree. Yeah, and I think it's also going back to that thing that you were saying about when you went in the office and there were other people around, you felt like you had to actually do some work. There is something that comes, there's more accountability face-to-face. I think maybe that's a part of it.
Yeah.
And you reinforce one another when you've got other people working on the same task with you at the same time. That drives one another on, so when one of you's flagging, the other one picks up, and that kind of thing, you know.
I also know that and obviously this is no one at Headscape, but I also know that people attend meetings and don't pay any attention to them. They're working on their project.
I know, right? I've seen people do that.
I've seen people disgraceful. Do that. It's awful.
I've never done it myself, obviously. I'm not doing it right now while you're doing your boring talking bit.
But your one of your skills is to be able to multitask, clearly, Paul. Yeah, you were saying about earlier on what things that you
oh
are.
I see yeah. Right, okay.
Better conflict resolution. Handling conflicts in person allows for a more constructive and empathetic approach. Non-verbal cues such as body language, same thing as before, basically. Yes, okay, but I think you can do that in a online meeting. But again, the next point, stronger social bonds. In-person interactions help create lasting personal and professional relationships. Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about here. And I guess it hadn't really dawned on me, this is the whole point of this. I'm actually going to jump pretty much towards the end because I'll keep repeating. AI repeats itself quite a lot.
It does. It says the same thing in slightly different ways. You know, stronger personal, professional networking. Authentic conversations. These are all kind of covered in some ways by the things that we've said all before. Very true, mine. I mean, it's an impressive list.
Yeah,
belonging and community, mental. For me, it's the mental health benefits, right? Yeah. You know, although I moan about other people, I don't like other people. I still know it's good for me to spend time with other people.
To the point of actually, I think it was damaging us not meeting up in person, and yet we talk to each other like this all the time.
I think historians or sociologists or somebody will look back on COVID and the fundamental changes that it had to society alongside things like Zoom meetings and that kind of thing, which all came together at the same time. And we'll see it as quite a damaging period. I don't think it's good for us personally. And especially from a work point of view, there is huge value of networking and spending time with people and going to, I mean, there's a lady in our agency academy who we were all gobsmacked at because she does something like 4 networking, in-person networking events per week.
What?
Right? Yeah, I know. And she really believes in it as a both from a relationship building point of view, a sales point of view and all of the rest of it. And she, you know, I think she's right. I mean, she's a workaholic. She's incredibly efficient, you know, amazing woman. But, you know, the idea of actually going into these things, I think is really important, both from a career development point of view, a social point of view, a learning point of view as well, you know, because you're exposed to all kinds of stuff that you wouldn't otherwise be exposed to in those kind of casual conversations that, you know, you don't have online in the same way.
Yeah, I mean, this is focused very much for me. This whole sort of piece is focused on me noticing that the relationships between the people that work at Headscape had kind of deteriorated a little bit. It wasn't like people were fighting or anything. It just wasn't as good as it was. And that was a bit of an eye-opener. So I thought, well, I'll talk about that. But yeah, Chris and I are going to a conference in February. Mm. And we have to force ourselves to do it.
Yeah.
But every time you go, it's like, well, wasn't that brilliant? And you talk to people that you haven't seen for years. You learn stuff that you get enthused about, and you know, you're not saying I want to retire every day, every other day.
Like I've been saying quite a lot recently. Yeah, I mean, I probably, you are entirely right. And this has left me going, I need to make more of an effort with this, especially as someone who works
on your own
solo. Yeah.
Because you said at the start, you know, am I telling you to go out? And I'm not, but then actually I think.
No, you are. Yeah, you are. And rightly so, I think. Yeah. And, for me, if because there will be a range of people listening to this. There will be some like you who run an agency. Right. And for those people, I absolutely, you know, agree for all the reasons that you've said. But I think if you work in-house, you networking with your colleagues and stuff like that. Maybe you do face-to-face stuff. But I would also encourage people, whatever situation you're in, to try and do in-person professional networking type events, whether it be meetups or conferences or stuff like that, to meet people that are struggling with the same stuff that you're struggling with in your role. Because there's not normally a lot of people doing your same role within the company. You know, you are UX person or the user researcher. So going and meeting other people in person that are doing these kinds of things, I just think is invaluable. And I was moaning about this on LinkedIn recently as well, that the trouble with the way that we learn these days, it's all via things like we have a question, so we ask ChatGPT or we search on it. But what about all the things that you don't know to ask questions about, or those different opinions and different, kind of angles on stuff? And when you go and spend time with people and you have a couple of pints in the pub after a talk and you're moaning about something and somebody says, oh, yeah, I suffer from that problem, but this is how I deal with it. And you get that kind of spontaneity of conversation and idea generation that you don't get over a distance in the same way. That's my feeling over it anyway.
Spot on. And going back to our episode of maybe the last one, the one before, anyway, when we were talking about what's going to happen in 2025, our predictions.
Yes.
I predict that people will start to see the value of going to conferences, probably. Doing that, you know, go back to the, maybe not quite the level they were 15 years ago, but doing it rather more because it is great and it enthuses you. That's always the best thing about it. And I think we could all do with a bit of enthusing.
Absolutely, especially at the moment. What conference are you going to in February?
It's Research by the Sea, run by Clear Left.
Oh, right, down in Brighton, is it?
Yeah, going to Brighton. Come down.
I might do that. I'll have a look afterwards.
It's all about you. It's all about user research. So, yeah.
You done?
I'm done. Yeah.
You finished? Good. I just wanted to talk about the Nielsen Norman Group very briefly as your interesting read of the week. Who are they? So the Nielsen Norman Group are obviously Jacob Nielsen and Don Norman, who are kind of founding fathers of the UX movement, really. And they've been posting some really interesting stuff recently about AI, and they are going in heavy on AI, that they think it will be absolutely central in the way that things are going forward, which I don't disagree with at all. And they've written three things that grabbed my attention. One is an article called Redefining Your Design Skills to Prepare for AI, which is a really nice detailed article about how AI is beginning to affect design and user experience and that kind of thing. So that's an article. I'll link obviously all of these in the show notes at boag.world/012. He's also posted some good stuff on LinkedIn as well, right? And on LinkedIn, Jacob Nielsen talks about, he thinks that this is the most fundamental shift in user experience since he started. And he describes it in quite an abstract way, which is a bit hard to wrap your head around in some ways, but I can see where he's coming from. That so far, right, everything in UX has been about enabling people to enter commands, right? Yeah. I want to edit this, so I'm hitting the edit button, right? And so it's all about the user issuing commands to the interface, and the interface then responds with hopefully appropriate responses, right? Our role has been about facilitating that relationship, right? Now he's saying, but our relationship with computers is changing. And that actually now we're not issuing commands, but we're defining outcomes. Okay. So let's say, for example, you wanted to cook a nice meal for your fiance, as she is now, right?
WTB. Yeah.
So. you've completely thrown my train of thought. Yeah, so you wanted to cook her a nice meal. Now, before, you would be entering a series of commands like, you know, go to a website which has got meal ideas on it, then go to a supermarket where I can buy the ingredients, you know, and then go to a website that provides me with the instructions about how to make that meal. Well, now it's much more going to be along the lines of, I want to cook a nice meal for my wife, right? And it will go, it will work out that it's, oh, okay, here's some suggestions of things you might want. Okay, I've added those to the shopping basket on Tesco's. Do you want me to order that for you? And here's the instructions once the things arrive. And it's working towards, it enables the outcome rather than you having to take it through the step-by-step commands of it.
Okay.
What we don't know, and I'm actually trying to persuade Jacob Nielsen to actually do an interview for the show, because I want to dig into this. There's still a lot of ambiguity about, well, what does that look like from a user experience perspective?
Yeah.
Is there actually an interface there? And probably not. It's probably something. Yeah. But then that information has to be conveyed back to you. So you wouldn't want it going, for example, and ordering off of Tesco's without confirming that it's doing the right stuff.
Yeah.
Right? And equally, you'll need those instructions. And how will you want those instructions for preparing the meal to come back to you? Is it all right for it to be verbally talking to you? Or do you want to be able to see it on the screen? Do you want, you know, so there are still user interface elements to it, and there are certainly user experience elements to it in terms of, you know, are you going to have to tell it that you've received the delivery, or will it already know that you've got the ingredients? And have you told it the date that you want to prepare the meal so it can remind you to do it? And, you know, so there are lots of interesting things around it. And of course, that's only one side of the whole equation, which is about what user interactions are going to look like with AI. And then the other thing he's talking about quite a lot is how it affects our job. You know, how do we use AI to deliver great user experiences to our users? And so he's, in this regard, he's just saying, look, you know, don't resist this. This is going to happen, which I couldn't agree with more. This is going to happen. We need to embrace AI and embrace AI tools and recognize that our role is going to change from being a tactical one of sitting down and designing a user interface in Figma or whatever else, to a more strategic role of assessing and working with content that AI is producing on our behalf. And he talks about the different roles that AI will provide us. So it will be an intern, it will be a coach, it will be, you know, a trainer and that kind of thing, and how we will work in this kind of collaborative relationship with AI.
Yeah, interesting. What's more interesting though, Paul, is because I like to cook, as you probably know, so it's a good example you use there, is if I like a recipe, I print it out.
Yes.
So, but AI could know that about me and print it out, rather than putting it on a screen for me somewhere.
Or you might just, you might get to a place where you just go, can you remember that recipe as one of my favorites? And then next time you go, I don't know what to cook. And it says, well, what have you got in your fridge? And then you go, well, I actually have got these things. And it goes, well, you said you like this recipe and you've got the ingredients for it.
That's a really good example. Because what AI can do that we can't do is see the really big picture.
Yeah.
Like, it's large, isn't it? It's a large language model.
Yeah.
Whereas we're great at seeing patterns and all that kind of thing. But, yeah, it's like we won't think to kind of like, oh, go and look at every item in the fridge and compare that to all of our recipes. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Ever. So, another great example of that is I bookmark stuff all the time. I see something online and I bookmark it and then immediately forget that the bookmark exists and forget what the thing was.
Exactly. And look at bookmarks, you know, and go, what does that mean? In the little kind of, you know, list of bookmarks. I'm like, I don't know what that is. So I ignore it.
You know, but now we're beginning to enter this world where the AI knows all of that information is available. And so next time I say I'm struggling doing some A/B testing, it can say, Well, you did, you know, bookmark something called Czech Mango ages ago, and it does seem to meet the requirements of what it is you're trying to do. Maybe you should check that out again, you know?
It's going to start calling you dummy soon, isn't it? You did book that mark, dummy.
Well, I've been saying that for years with sat navs about how incredibly patient a sat nav is with me. You know, I go, right, it just says rerouting. You know, and, well, I would be going, you bloody idiot, why did you turn left there? You know. So I just wanted to finish up with a little question that Paul Edwards shared in the Agency Academy. Just to remind, if people don't know what the Agency Academy is, we run a kind of group coaching type session where we get together once a week and we chat about the agencies or freelance businesses we run. And we also have a Slack channel where we share stuff as well. So if you fancy joining that, I'll put a link in the show notes. But yeah, we were talking, we were having a conversation. And he's trying to automate more stuff, going back to all this. Well, not really the AI stuff, but the idea of taking out the grunt work from running an agency. And he said, I would love to hear about automations that people have set up. I'm going down that route and I need some inspiration. Right. It just made me think about how obsessive compulsive I am with this stuff. I have so many automations in my life now. So just run off a few, just to kind of hopefully other people are thinking about how they can automate certain parts of their job. And maybe this will be a bit of an inspiration to some of you. So we've got email. I automate a lot of my email now so that I use tools like clean.email, which basically will unsubscribe me from all of those newsletters that I get and get rid of all of those kinds of things. I use Spark to auto respond to certain emails with a template. I've also got text expansion tools, so things like Text Expander and Type Deck. So instead of having, for example, my rates, I have a rate card and I always forget what my rates are at different levels. So I've just got I type dot rates and it kind of pre-populates that, or you could pre-populate your address and all of those kinds of things. I automate all of my social media these days. So it all goes out either via something like CoSchedule or Buffer, which means that anytime I post something to my blog, CoSchedule will go in and send an update immediately when I publish, a day later, 2 days later, a week later, and that kind of thing. Saves me so much work doing all that crap. I've got loads of email automations as well. So, for example, if you want to do a newsletter, but you don't want to have to continually write them, so what you can do is you can write it once. So maybe write 12 emails in a series on a particular subject. And then when someone subscribes, they get one week later, 1 2 weeks later, and 3 weeks later without the need to manually send those out. That's really useful. Then, of course, there's tools like Zapier. That's apparently how you're supposed to say it, which connects different platforms together. So, for example, when someone, say I've got, I suppose it'll be out by the time this goes out, but I'm running a workshop on conversion rate optimization. And when someone signs up for that, I take their money via Stripe, and then I use Stripe informs Zapier, and Zapier tells my email system that will then send out an email thanking people for subscribing. So you can do loads of stuff like that. I also do a load of automations within Notion. So for example, I have, well, let's take this podcast. This podcast has a page. I mean, the human factor always undermines it because Marcus doesn't do what he's supposed to, so it ruins this. But in theory, right, in theory, obviously, the audio for this needs editing. Marcus edits it. So the idea then is Marcus gives me a link in Notion. There is a field for it, Marcus. You've never even noticed it. But when he puts that into Notion, that will automatically notify me that it's ready to prepare for post, and it'll tag the Notion thick page to say it's ready for release and ready for preparation, all that kind of stuff. So you can automate those kinds of project management stuff. And then there's, I could go on for ages, but you get the idea. So just, I think what I'm encouraging people to do here is really think about the way that you work and about any repetitive tasks that you endlessly do time and time again, and just see what you can do to automate that process. So Marcus, in your case, like I use a platform called Quiller for my proposals, and it's got, basically you can create blocks of like on different things to about Headscape or, you know, or user testing blocks or whatever. And then you can put placeholders in that, which are the client's name. So then when you create a proposal, you just assemble the blocks, it automatically replaces the client name, so you don't end up with accidentally with the wrong client name where you copied and pasted it from
never
a previous
done that.
Proposal.
Never.
So it's things like that, you know. So there are always chances to automate everything you do, and it's worth considering and giving it a go. Yeah, that's about it, I think, for this show. Hopefully there was some good stuff in there that was useful to you. Bit waffly, this one. I felt we waffled a lot. But
I don't mind a bit of waffling. It's fine. It's what we do.
I think people live with it.
They are going to have to live with it. Yes, if they're still, you're still with us, they're waiting on the joke, aren't they?
Well, to be honest, if they got this far in the show, they must be happy with the waffle. Exactly. That's the only logic.
Well, here we go. This joke. I'm a member of a golfing WhatsApp group. I'm a member of two, actually. But anyway, this was a joke shared on there that I can actually repeat. Most of them you can't. So this is a husband and a wife. And the husband says to the wife, "If I died, would you date another man?" And she says, "Of course I would." And he then says, "Would you let him move into our house?" And she says, "Yeah, of course I would." And then he says, "Would you let him sleep in our bed?" And she says, "Yeah, of course." And the husband says, "Would you let him use my golf clubs?" And she said, "Definitely not." And he said, "Is that because they're personal to me?" And she says, "No, it's because he's left-handed." Which made me laugh.
That is actually a legitimately good joke. It's not appropriate for this podcast because it's too good. No, that's a good one, Marcus. I like it. I will make sure that we include that when we put it out on social media. People need to hear it. All right, that's it. Thank you very much for listening to this week's show. I hope you'll join us again next time. And until then, thanks for listening.
Goodbye.